It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel, the theme of our show, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. I want to introduce a very special guest. We're honored to have him because he actually voted legally in the election. He lives in the country, he's a United States citizen, and he voted. Go figure. Say hello to Jim Barrier.
Hey, good evening, Bob. And actually, I'm a Texas citizen as well.
Oh, that's true. Texas thinks it's its own country. Well, it once was. It once was its own country.
Yeah, we did good. It's so good to talk to you. As you know, I've been gone for over a month, and I kind of want to give a update about some things that I experienced and learned over the last month. It's been a wild ride, and a lot has happened in this country while I was out of the country. Leslie and I spent the month of October in Europe, and we traveled to France, Amsterdam, Brussels, Vienna, Hungary, Ireland, and Northern Ireland, which are two different countries, neither of which speak English. They would tell you they do, but it doesn't sound like English to me. So we were all over the map, and it was just a crazy thing. And for Brandon, who I know is listening, I picked a great year to be out of the country during October because I couldn't have stood listening to the Dodgers win the World Series. So get that out of the way. So I just wanted to kind of report to you some of my experiences that I think are relevant to this show, to Christianity, pop culture, and the political scene in America and around the world, because a lot of it was quite an eye-opener for me. And happy Thanksgiving, Bob, to you and to all the listeners.
Yeah, and happy Thanksgiving to you, and please extend that to Leslie as well.
I will. And I think this may be one of the most thankful Thanksgivings that I've ever experienced.
Oh, no kidding. Well, at least just politically speaking, but I guess you have other reasons too.
Yeah, but this is a great time to give thanks to the Lord. So let me tell you what we did since I last spoke with you. Leslie and I headed out. We were going to do this trip in April, but then, as you know, I had retina surgery, and when you have retina surgery, you can't fly because they put a little gas bubble in your eye to hold things in place. And so we postponed the trip and decided to go in October, which turned out to be a benefit in many ways because we had time to reevaluate and change some of our itinerary. So our first stop was in Normandy in France, where we visited the site of D-Day.
Did they have a plaque where Biden led the battle himself on D-Day?
No, but there was a lot of stuff to see. And this was 80 years ago. That's what's amazing. So very few people are alive today that were old enough to remember that day. It's just an incredible thing. So we were there, and Leslie and I walked out onto Omaha Beach, where thousands of Americans were killed. And it was very peaceful and calm. The weather was nice. And there was hardly anybody else out there within sight. And we got someone from our tour group to come to take a picture of the two of us. But the whole time I'm out there, I'm repeating in my mind these scenes from Saving Private Ryan and The Longest Day.
Wasn't it like the first 40 minutes of that movie was just the touchdown on Normandy?
Brutal. Yeah. And those scenes were just carved into my mind so violently. And so I'm there on this peaceful, calm beach, but all I can see in my mind are these waves of young soldiers, and we're talking young, some teenagers, just being gunned down by the Germans. It was a very, very emotional experience. And then, of course, we visited it's similar to some of the graveyards that they have here for soldiers, but it was just kind of austere. It was overwhelming to see the numbers. And I think there were 2,500 Americans killed and another 5,000 wounded. The German casualties were hard to estimate, but they say somewhere between 4,000 and 9,000 Germans were killed. And then all the other Allied troops, over 4,000 Allied troops combined. But the Americans took the heaviest brunt of it because they landed in Omaha Beach, which was heavily fortified, and there just was no protection for the soldiers getting off.
And there was mining, and it was booby-trapped.
Yeah, we did a long tour. We had a tour guide that took us around. We visited some of the bunkers that the Germans were in and some of the other sites, some of the other beaches. But Omaha is the one that's just so much etched in my mind. But that was a real life-impacting experience for me to actually stand there. And really, I was moved by the whole thing. So I will never, ever forget that in my life. It was very overwhelming. So that was one experience that was really incredible. I mean, we were on tour, we were on vacation doing these things, but some of the stuff was very serious, and that was probably the most serious. And then right up there with that, we went to Amsterdam, and we took a little trip over to Haarlem. And actually, I said Amsterdam as a country, but it's Holland is the country. But we went over to Haarlem, where the Corrie ten Boom house is. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the Corrie ten Boom
story. Oh, yes.
The hiding place. We did a tour of that house. And they retold the story, and they put in a fake wall where they would hide the Jews. They would climb into this little place. They were packed like sardines in there. They had less than a minute. If the alarm went off that the Nazis were coming, everybody had to scurry up there and get in this little closet behind the wall. I actually went in there. They asked for a volunteer, and I'm always the one that volunteers. So I went in there in this little cubbyhole and behind the wall. And again, it was very moving. I, of course, had read her book, and then they made a movie out of The Hiding Place.
Yes, I remember that.
They did a good job on it. I mean, I was very privileged to hear Corrie ten Boom speak before she died. She actually settled in Southern California, and actually she's laid to rest in Santa Ana. But she came down to San Diego and spoke. Her message was always about forgiveness. And she tells the story. If folks don't know the story, Corrie and her family, it was similar to the Anne Frank story, but these were Christians. They were hiding Jews in their house and helping them to escape from Amsterdam as the Nazis were just going through and rounding up people. And
the price she paid for it was that she ended up going to a concentration camp herself.
She did. Someone blew the whistle on them. And she and her sister, Betsy, who is really the prominent character in the story, and her father were all sent to a prison camp. And her dad and her sister died in the prison camp. And in fact,
yeah, and it wasn't one of the death camps where they sent the Jews, but it was still very brutal.
It was very brutal. And she watched her sister get beat to death. It's an incredible story. She had to deal with that and the reality of God saying that we have to forgive those who have trespassed against us. And her sister really impacted that and drove that home with her and said, we have to forgive. You know, it's the command of the Lord. Well, her dad and sister died in the camp. Corrie was released on a clerical error and got out.
She was sentenced to be killed.
Oh, she
very
was.
Soon, but by a clerical error, she was delivered from that place.
She was delivered. And I think like 2 weeks later, everybody there was sent to the gas chambers. And so it was really miraculous that she got out of there. I think her family saved over 800 Jews in the house that's now called The Hiding Place. And it's just an amazing story. So if you've never read the story, The Hiding Place, I would encourage everyone to get that book. It's a tough book. It's realistic. It tells a story, and some of it's pretty brutal. But it's one of those things that it's a truth that we have to be aware of. We can't live in denial about that. The Holocaust was real. And this is someone who lived through it. So the Corrie ten Boom house was another very dramatic thing for me, very emotional time. And those two things really stood out for me on this trip because they were the reality of the generation before us that Tom Brokaw appropriately called the greatest generation. And, you know, you just think of these people who were so selfless and they gave their lives to protect others. American soldiers went over there and fought. And the truth is, it turned the tide in the war. If the U.S. had not gone to Europe, I just don't know how they would have fared. But these young men, 18, 19, early 20s, went over and sacrificed their lives to fight one of the most hideous regimes that ever walked on this planet. It's an overwhelming thing to realize that that happened, that people made such a sacrifice for the freedom of others. And then the Ten Boom family, that they personally made a sacrifice, and in the case of her family, died so that they could protect Jews. The truth is they never used their thing to try to preach to the Jews. They were just, her father kept saying, these are the people that gave us the Bible and the Messiah, and we owe them. They're God's people.
Well, and part of the gospel is also delivering people from sins committed against them. It's not just preaching forgiveness. So I would say they were living the gospel just by protecting the Jews.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. They were living the gospel. They were living the lives of a true follower of Christ. And that's what's so powerful about it. Now, most of us in our time and in this country have not had to pay such a severe price just to be a Christian. I would say we have it pretty easy compared to some generations and some eras in history. But these folks, not only the soldiers on D-Day, but the Ten Boom people and then others throughout the whole World War II experience, who lived so selflessly, and even in this country, you know, when the men went off to war, the women that were here were, instead of building cars and other machines, they were building tanks and jeeps to support the war effort. Everybody did their part to win that campaign. It's an amazing thing to think about, but to be there and stand in the places, to go into the houses, to stand on the beach, I will never, ever forget my time there. That's how we started the trip off.
All right. Well, we want to hear more about your trip to Europe when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Yes, Christmas is in the air, freedom is in the air, and Jim Barrier is on the air.
And, you know, thank you. I always love being on your show this time of year because you're not ashamed or afraid or hesitant to play Christmas music before Thanksgiving.
Well, and I used to be a rarity, but I'm hearing a lot more people talk about putting up their decorations and listening to the music before Thanksgiving. Yeah. They're actually arguing about it on Fox News. So I may have been a novelty for a while, but not anymore.
Not anymore. But, well, a lot of people in our neighborhood have lights up and everything. And I say God bless them, you know. I always love Christmas because it's that time when even people who aren't believers or professing Christians, they still celebrate an event. They don't know the power of it, the reality of it. But even if they're just singing songs or putting up lights or whatever they're doing, it's celebrating the fact that God sent his son to come be a savior for us. So I love that.
Growing up, I loved this time of year, even though I didn't understand anything about it, didn't understand Jesus, but I loved this time of year.
Me too. Same thing. And I didn't know, I never knew a thing about Jesus until I was 16 years old.
And then you watched a Charlie Brown Christmas and Linus explained it all to you. And that was that.
You know, that's one of the greatest explanations.
It actually is.
I actually
that's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
I actually played that in church one time. Had a recording of it and played that. It's so iconic.
For unto us a Savior is born with Christ the Lord.
Okay. Yeah, I love Christmas. So here we're going to go back now to the trip. Let me indulge in my reflections of the greatest trip I've ever been on as far as a vacation or a tour or anything. I'm a month long. That's ridiculous. So we went all over the place. The only city we visited that we'd ever been to before was Paris, because that's where our plane flew into Paris. And then from there, we took trains and stuff all over the place.
Did you like it? Now, I always hear that that's everybody's favorite city for some reason. If I was going to Europe, that would not be high on my list. It would be far below Rome, far below England, Ireland, Scotland, the Scandinavian countries.
I'd have it toward Johnny Cash song. I've been everywhere, man. But Leslie, I think, would tell you that Paris is her favorite city.
Yeah.
I'm happy to go with her there. The problem with Paris is this. I mean, it is a beautiful city and there's great culture, but you can't eat sugar-free in Paris. It's just not a reality. Everywhere it's pastries and sweets and cakes and chocolate. And so
no wonder the Nazis conquered it so easily. They probably ate well while they were there.
Well, and we ate well on our whole trip. But my new favorite city, at least it's in my top three at this point, is Prague. The capital of
Prague
the
in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, the Czech Republic now, it's called. And I had no idea. I'd had people tell me they really loved the city. We went there. I fell in love with Prague. I also ate some really interesting food. Had the best food of anywhere we went. Yeah, now here's the story with the Czech Republic. It was known as, historically, as Bohemia, then later Czechoslovakia, and it survived under the rule of the Holy Roman Empire, the Habsburg Empire, the Austrian Empire, Nazi Germany, and Eastern Bloc Communism. And so these people for 1,000 years have always been under somebody's thumb. That's the thing to understand about the Czech people and the mentality there.
They're tenants with a lot of bad landlords.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in 1989, there was an event, they refer to it as the Velvet Revolution. It was a nonviolent transition of power. Hundreds of thousands of people flooded the square downtown and in Czechoslovakia and ended communist rule. Now, this was all about the same time when the wall came down and President Reagan said, tear the wall down, Mr. Gorbachev. And so they peacefully transitioned out of communist rule. And then in 1992, it was divided into the Czech Republic and Slovakia, and they became two sovereign nations. That's an incredible thing that took place. Now, Prague is called the City of 100 Spires. And we had a few vantage points. We went up to the palace, a different place where you could see out over the whole city. And it's amazing. All of these spires, scores and scores of church spires all over the building. Prague was one of the few cities that wasn't bombed during World War II. So all of this beautiful architecture is still intact. And it's just amazing. And despite this, with all these beautiful churches and stuff, the Czech Republic is one of the least religious countries in Europe. I find that interesting. In fact, most of the places I've been in Europe, you can see religion's history in the great cathedrals and basilicas. And we love that. We went to some beautiful, beautiful churches. And yet the culture is predominantly humanistic. So the religion has remained in the paintings and the architecture and some of that great stuff, statues and things. But the people themselves are not really very religious anymore. There are little pockets of places. In fact, we were in Budapest, another fascinating city. And Leslie saw that there was an English mass at St. Stephen's Basilica, the largest church in the city. And it was on an evening. We didn't have anything going on. So we went to Mass. This is a good story. I love this story. We're sitting there, and a man came out and was asking for a volunteer, and nobody would volunteer. I always volunteer. So I raised my hand, and he said, "Would you do the reading tonight?" I said, "Sure." So a few minutes later, the service began, and the guy comes out in a robe. It was the priest had come out and recruited me. So at the right time, he motioned that I came up, and I did the reading in a Mass in Budapest, in the biggest church in Budapest, and read from 2 Timothy chapter 2, which includes the line, I know you know this one, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, that a workman that need not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." I found this incredible, because he selected the reading. He said, just read this passage. And here I am, preaching the gospel, if you will, in a foreign city at the invite of a Catholic priest who was from, I think, Ghana, a country somewhere in Africa. Wonderful man, very gentle spirit, spoke pretty good English. And I thought, well, that was a highlight for me to get to do that. And we visited with him after service, and Leslie is very, very bold. And she said, "Would you mind if we prayed for you?" And he said, "Of course." And he knelt down at our feet. I will never forget this image. And we laid hands on him and prayed for him, prayed for this Catholic priest in Budapest. It was a great highlight for me. So that was a little sidelight. Now, back to Prague. Yeah. I want to go back to Prague. So while we're in Prague, we had a four-hour walking tour of the city. We walked all over that city, and it's up and down hills. And we had a tour guide who walked really fast. He was a young man, you know, early 30s, just 30, 31, 32, I don't know. And at the end of the tour, he said, "My grandparents survived Hitler's invasion."
Wow.
"My parents survived communism." And he kind of rolled his eyes, rolled his head back, as if Nazis weren't bad enough, then the communists came in. And he said, "My generation, from 1992 till now, is the first generation to enjoy freedom and no war." It was profound, the power of him saying that, that he was celebrated that. And I'm telling you, his political views are quite different from people his age in this country. He loves freedom. He doesn't
love... Well, when he hears all the talk about socialism and redistribution of wealth, he knows what's really going on.
Oh, they rolled their eyes. And I had another experience. We were in a train station, maybe in Ireland somewhere, and I'm sitting there, and this Nigerian man sat next to me, and I spoke English, and he said, "Where are you from?" And my standard answer is, I always say, "I'm from Texas," because there's a little mystique. You know, and the first thing they say is, "Do you own a gun? You know, do you ride a horse?" And I said, I'm from Texas. He said, "Oh, is Texas red or blue?" And I said, "Well, for now, it's still red." And this is what this Nigerian man said to me in Ireland. "I don't understand how someone in your country can be running for president that never got one vote from their party in the primaries." And he said that to me. And I said, "Well, you know, I think that there are people behind the curtain that are pulling the strings." And he said, "Oh, Obama and Pelosi?" This is a man from Nigeria that had a greater...
Among others, and George Soros and Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
there's a whole host of them back there.
He saw it for what it's worth, and I thought, this guy's smarter than most of the Americans.
Yeah,
you know?
That's for sure. Okay, hold with that thought, Jim. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connor's strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home, and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, and now it's time for our show within a show, another episode of Stump Jim Barrier.
Yes, Jim, even on your vacation, I always have to get a Stump Jim Barrier in there, even then. All right, Jim.
Okay.
So, yeah. By special request, you asked for a 60s rock song, and by a special request, and because we are in the middle of the holiday season, I am thankful to give you a special 60s rock song for you. So, you ready, sir?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. Let it play.
I know this one, too, but I'll let Jim guess
it. Yeah. I saw these guys several times. And one of the bands started, got on the blues kick.
That's right, yes.
And, but I'm out on the road again. On the road again. And Heat. But I'm so tired of crying, but I'm out on the road. Quite a band.
Yeah, you got it. That was quick. Yeah.
You know what? I need to take that back. I did not get it. It sounded very much like the instrumental beginning of Spirit in the Sky to me. Well, isn't that a similar beginning to Spirit in the Sky?
I could hear that for sure.
Yeah, you're right. It's the EGA kind of progression. So yeah, you're right, yeah. Bob. You got that one right.
However, my hat goes off to you. I would not have guessed what it actually was. So good job, Jim.
Well, that opening is pretty familiar. I mean, it of course, heard it so many times. It's hard to... Hard to forget some of those songs. Not that I don't forget some of those songs, but that's a good one.
Jim, if you can guess.
For goodness, back to the 60s.
Yeah, I just want to see if you can guess the city that the band started from. Go ahead. Let's see if you can get it.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I always thought that they were one of the Bay Area bands, but because they were tied into that whole crowd.
The answer is Prague.
Where were they from, Brandon?
L.A., to be exact. So you're LA, close. Okay. Well, it was LA, California in general. So good.
Well, who isn't from L.A.?
That's true.
Well, the thing about Canned Heat, and I did see them a few times, they were really a pack of nerds. You know, they didn't look like today's rock stars and stuff. They were kind of goofy-looking, nerdy guys, but boy, they could play the blues. That was their strong suit. In fact, I don't know if they did an album one time with John Lee Hooker, who was one of the old original Mississippi Delta blues artists. And so they did an album, and the name of the album was Hooker and Heat. Because Canned Heat.
So there's a lesson here. If you have a reputation for being a nerd and you want to kill the reputation, start playing the blues.
That's right. Get a guitar.
That'll do it.
And The chicks will love you. Okay, well, that was good. Thanks for getting us back to the 60s, because that's the only stuff I remember anymore.
Oh, now, Jim, I've got to say, you've done very well in the other eras, too.
Yeah,
you've missed a few, but you've done pretty good. I think your versatility goes beyond the 60s. However, we aim to please here.
I appreciate that, and I hope the audience gets a little chuckle out of that sometimes. Okay, now, we're going to move on to a birthday to remember that I'd like to forget. As it turned out, my birthday happened during this trip while we were in Ireland, which is a fascinating country, or Ireland and Northern Ireland, which is crazy because Northern Ireland is part of the British Empire. Ireland is part of the European Union, and so they use different currency. None of the people there speak English that's intelligible to someone like me, but had a great time, ate a lot of fish and chips. So we're in Ireland, wrapping up the tour. We're on our last weekend, and it was my birthday, which you know is on Halloween. And I told Les when we lined all this up, I said, on my birthday, I want to go to an Irish pub and listen to Irish folk music. So that's what we did. We got into Dublin, checked into our hotel, and then wandered around and went looking for a pub. And so we found this place and saw it. We could see through the window there were some musicians up there playing. And it's fun music. And we were there for, I don't know, a couple of hours, had dinner. And I unwisely ordered a sample plate. And I don't know what any of it was. I couldn't tell by looking at it what it was. But I ate it. And we turned in early because it had been a long day. We had just come by train from Galway, which is over on the west coast of Ireland, and went to our room, turned in, and at about 2 in the morning, I woke up violently ill. And
was it the fish and chips?
Well, it wasn't fish and chips at this restaurant. It was whatever that plate was with you know, Irish food.
The Lucky Charms.
Yes, that's what it was.
Trust and Lucilia, the sweet surprises.
Yeah, well, there was no pot of gold at the end of this one. I'm just going to tell you that. So about 2 in the morning, I get up and start my first round of trips to the restroom. And maybe the third or fourth time, I passed out.
Oh, my gosh, Jim.
Oh, this is crazy.
Wow.
I passed out, and Leslie heard me, and she looked up as I was falling, and I fell into the corner of a wall and hit my forehead.
Oh,
and
is that what knocked your eye retina out again?
No, it wasn't actually. They said it had nothing to do with it.
Really?
I went back to see the, but it did cause a lot of bleeding. And so I'm laying there on the floor in a pool of blood and other fluids. And Leslie calls the desk and the manager comes up. I'm laying on the floor and this is what I hear. Oh, my God.
And wow.
The manager immediately,
what a damper on your vacation.
Well, it was a crazy way to end it. He calls an ambulance. They came and took me to an emergency room in a hospital, which we found out later was like, they call it a war zone. It's in a rough part of town, and it's Halloween night, so the place is full of drunks and drug addicts, and it was a crazy thing. The guy in the ambulance and the doctor in the emergency both immediately said, you have food poisoning. So they gave me an IV, and they stitched me up, and they took x-rays because I landed pretty awkwardly. They did a concussion protocol. I did not have a concussion. Did blood tests. I was there for maybe 8 hours, and it was a crazy experience. So that's how I wound up my trip, knowing that I had to fly home in a couple of days. So we just spent the next 2 days in our hotel room, didn't even leave the room. So I'll never forget that birthday. So we had a flight home, long flight. We flew from Dublin to Philadelphia to Charlotte, finally to San Antonio, and got home about midnight on Sunday night, and I've got stitches, and I'm on painkillers, and I had previously scheduled an appointment with my retina surgeon because, you know, I've had a lot of work on my retina this year, and I was supposed to go in and do a follow-up, and she looks at it, and she says, oh, no. And apparently the retina had started to separate again. Though it was not related.
Any idea what made it separate? Because I was under the impression it had been a successful surgery before.
Well, it was, but she was going to go in and clean up some scar tissue and stuff, but apparently some fluids had begun to get behind the retina and cause it to pull away. So the very next day, next morning, early in the morning, I go in and we do surgery again. This is Tuesday morning, Election Tuesday. They do the surgery. I'm in there for 2 hours in surgery and got out of surgery, immediately went to In-N-Out Burger.
Well, thank goodness for that at least.
Yeah. And then to the voting polls where we waited for an hour and a half. I sat down because for the next week, I had to have my face parallel to the ground for 45 minutes out of every hour. So I'm sitting there in a chair with my head in my hands while Leslie's standing in line, and a lady came up and sat down next to me. This is another thing that I will never, ever forget. She asked if I was okay, and she had her four sons with her who were all voting age. I said yes, and I told her the story about the surgery, and I said, I have voted in the last 12 presidential elections, and I'm not going to miss this one. And she shook my hand, and then each of her boys came by and shook my hand. It was really something. And so I voted, and now after 8 hours in an emergency room, 16-hour trip home, a two-hour surgery, voting, I went home and went to bed.
I'll bet.
I know you remember as well as I do what 4 years ago in the events that took place.
And yeah, we went to bed with Trump ahead, and when we woke up, Biden was miraculously ahead because of all these extra boxes they dragged in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and that's what I remembered. And I said, you know what? I'm on drugs. I don't feel good. I'm just going to go to bed. I'll find out tomorrow what happened if they have any decision. And I woke up at 3 a.m., and I looked over, and you had sent a text, and it said that Biden won.
Trump won, yeah.
And I started weeping. I was so grateful because I was very, very concerned, as many of us were. I was very concerned
about... Our republic would not have survived another 4 years.
Yeah.
It would not have.
Really,
so I was very grateful, too.
I was, too. And so that's how Election Day went for me. But I can't... And I was so glad that you said...
Well, you were a real trooper on Election Day. That's a great encouragement to people who might stay home and blow it up, because a lot of people going through what you did would say, okay, and we're in Texas, and we know Texas is going to go red. And they would have just rationalized not going over and voting.
Yeah, not a chance with me. You know, I have voted since I was 18, which was a long, long time ago. And I will, anytime I'm physically able and mentally capable, I'm going to vote. And I think those four boys, I think it affected them because they're new, and I'm sure for most of them it's their first time to vote. And when I told them my story, I think they got an idea about how important it is to some of us.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I was glad that I met those folks. I'm pretty sure the lady was a Christian, just the way her demeanor and the way she came over, the concern she had for me and everything, and the fact that her boys had enough respect to shake my hand said an awful lot.
Okay, well, hold with me, Jim, for one more segment.
Okay.
You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jim, I'm just delighted to hear that you are okay. I had been lifting you up every day when you told me you were going in for retina surgery again, as I'm sure all of your friends were. And I know you have many friends, and we're all very happy for you.
I appreciate that. And I had people praying everywhere, and it does make a difference. And by the way, as we went, you just played two of my favorite songs, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, and then before the break, it was O Come Emmanuel. Those are two of my favorite Christmas songs, so thanks for putting those in there. By the way, I saw the statue of Good King Wenceslaus in Wenceslaus Square.
Oh,
however, he was only a duke. He was.
I'll give $5 to anybody who can explain what the heck that Christmas carol is all about. I love the music to it, but I've never understood the story of King Wenceslaus. It sounds like some kind of ketchup or relish.
Yeah, you're thinking of Worcestershire.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it sounds
We did see his square and his statue. So now, the election. Trump not only won handily, but he won the popular vote.
Which is good, because even though we believe in the Electoral College, if he had not won the popular vote, you know the Democrats, he didn't really win. He didn't win the popular. So I'm glad he won both.
Yeah, there's nothing they could say. And the Republicans carried the House and the Senate. And so my question to you is this a mandate by the American people?
It is. And I know even Brit Hume on Fox News was trying to say it's not really a mandate because he still won by a small margin. But I don't think that's the correct way to look at it. I think the correct way to look at it is that they tried to jail him. They tried to get him off the ballots. They tried to assassinate him.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the inroads he made with so many people that previously had been voting Democrat, like Jewish people and Black people and Hispanic people. Oh. And when you look at that, I would say whole new mandate certainly is here. Now, one thing that concerns me is so many of his cabinet picks are being pulled from the House of Representatives, and we don't have that much of a majority there, so I hope they're being careful.
Well, so far, the ones that I know anything about, I like the people that he's choosing for those positions. I think he's not going to mess around. He's going to get people in there that'll help him get the job done. And that's my next question. Will Trump bring about the change that this country needs?
I know he's honest and will do everything he can to fulfill his promise, unlike 99% of politicians, Republicans and Democrats. However, particularly when you look at what Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy want to do by just cutting out all the waste and firing. I mean, Musk went into Twitter, and I think it was somewhere between 60 to 70% of the staff he just fired. I would love to see that happen, but you got to believe that the deep state is not going to leave easily. They are entrenched like a giant tree with gargantuan roots all over the neighborhood and under the streets. And they're going to put this in the hands of so many lawyers. Also, Biden's laying all these booby traps. Biden and Harris love to brag about this is a peaceful transition of power, unlike Trump, who didn't leave peacefully in 2020. And Biden had him to the White House for coffee. They're also doing everything they can to appoint as many liberal judges as possible before it turns January. Biden's virtually doing everything he can to start World War III. He gives the green light for Ukraine to go ahead and send long-range missiles into Russia, which they have done. Governors all over the country are saying that they're not going to work with ICE in the sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. And these are the people that love to brag about peaceful transition of power. Yeah. There's nothing peaceful about it. So he's going to get a lot of resistance, but he's smarter this time. He's a quick study. You remember, Jim, over the air, I said many times these last few years, if Trump ever gets back in power, he can't assume that because a Republican is on his staff, they'll have his back, or because somebody's a respected general or head of the FBI, he needs to bring in his own people. And I said, he needs to go in and everybody under the authority of the executive branch, he needs to fire up to the guy that takes out the wastebasket. Looks like he's going to try to do it. Will he succeed? Yeah. I would say, I think he will, but it's not going to be easy. Here's the way I put it with the election results. We won the battle. We have not yet won the war.
That's a great way to put it. And, you know, peaceful transition of power doesn't exist. Power is the most addictive thing in this world, than more than any drug.
Power is very seductive once people get a taste.
Yeah.
And I think there's people that go to Washington meaning well, but once they get a taste of that power, they don't want to leave.
Yeah, that's what he's up against, really, and always has been. But I'm hopeful. I was so encouraged at the results because I was not as hopeful as some. So I'm glad things went the way they did at this point. And I'll be praying for the man and hope that we get some things turned around in this country. And then having said that, I'm just going to close tonight with, we're headed into Thanksgiving week, and I am so grateful. I'm thankful that I'm still alive. I have my health. I've had 4 procedures on my eye, but they tell me it's going to recover. I live in the greatest country in the world, and I just visited 7 others that were lots of fun, but I wouldn't live anywhere else in the world. I have a wonderful family. You know my wife, Leslie. She's a champion, has seen me through so many things. I have friends that are worth more than gold, and I count you among those.
Oh, I count you as one of my best friends too, Jim.
I appreciate that. And I serve a God who is faithful and powerful, just and merciful. And I just have so much to be grateful for. And I pass that along. And I would say to every listener, find something to give thanks for. And if you don't know the Lord personally, if you don't know God, if you haven't professed Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior and turned your life over to Him, do so. And you will find things to be grateful for and a person to give that thanks to. So that's what I'm going into this season with, is a heart of gratitude.
Okay. And, well, Jim, I'm very, very grateful that you are still around. I wouldn't like it if you weren't around, and my audience wouldn't like the once a month when you wouldn't be around. So have a wonderful Thanksgiving, everybody.
You too. Okay.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.